Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability. Disrespect welcomes John Stapleton of the Modernizing Income Security Task Force.
John, what's your title?
I was a former provincial civil servant, but I was, I've been for the last few years, I've been with St. Christopher House in Toronto.
Okay.
My title is Research Director and Co-Chair of the Working Group of the Modernizing Income Security for Working Age Adults Task Force. That's a mouthful, eh?
Sounds like heavy lifting, co-chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long has the work been going on?
It's been going on since August of 2004.
So you've come up with 11 recommendations. It sounds like you've had to be very focused to get to 11, which is a very specific number. Where did this come from, and how did you get to where you're going now, in a nutshell?
Well, really, it came from the work that the Toronto City Summit Alliance had been doing in terms of taking the temperature of the City of Toronto and seeing the various issues that faced it. And one of those was low-income people who couldn't make ends meet, even though they were working full-time, full year. And for me, I come from St. Christopher House, where which is a community agency and multi-service center that was noticing much the same thing. And it seemed to center on the issue of people from 18 to 64, as opposed to either seniors or for youth.
So it centers on the group who are normally accessing ODSP and Ontario?
In part, because when we look at the amount of people who are working age and who are also living in poverty, that's around 900,000 people.
Yeah.
And only half of those would be on any sort of full-time income support, as we might put it.
Right.
And the rest of them are what we would term the working poor population.
Right. Okay. So in numerically, then, your results are directed equally at two groups, then.
Well, really,
working poor and fixed income recipients.
That's right, and they're often the same people at different times.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I guess when we're looking at that portion of Ontario's population, the 18 to 64 year olds, which is about 8.2 million people out of the roughly 12 to 13 million people in Ontario, we're looking at somewhat more than 10% of that group.
So you're looking at 820,000 plus?
About closer to 900,000. So.
Okay, and these are working poor and fixed income recipients.
That's right. Yeah.
But they're not a homogeneous block politically, are they? They don't. They don't have like a solid representation, like stockbrokers or something.
Well, no, yeah, I think you probably hit the nail on the head there, because really it's a group that is largely disenfranchised and very politically dispersed.
Yeah. Everything from redneck conservative to flaming left, too. I think a population with so many interests in common would be politically better glued together, but it's not true.
It's not the case for several reasons, and probably the first reason is that certain people are able to access the workforce and other people are not, and so that creates creates a difference in the first instance. But really, people, the way we think of poverty in our society today is we tend to think that people are responsible for their own situation and really ought to be making out on their own towards self-sufficiency, and that viewpoint is largely shared by people in the working poor and in the fixed income populations, as you put it. And as a result, if we think of poverty as a personal deficit and something which you're supposed to overcome on your own, then people really aren't looking to the rest of wider society to deal with that.
That must be an important focus of your report. In other words, if people aren't looking to even the groups that are available to help them, you must be looking for some way to make this seem less onerous.
Well, That's exactly right. If you look over the last 15 years especially, you can see that the programs that were available to both the working poor, the temporarily unemployed, people on fixed incomes, on social assistance, for example, have dropped quite precipitously. But that same thing is not true for wage earners in the population, where that have generally kept pace, and people who we normally think of on fixed incomes, whether we're talking about senior citizens receiving old age security or children receiving the benefits through the Canada Child Tax Benefit, all those are kept up to date with inflation, as are other programs like the Canada Pension Plan for seniors. And so what we really noticed is the relative erosion of programs for working age adults as they relate to the rest of the population. And given that high costs, especially in large urban areas, we're noticing that people who are working full-time, full year, are not able to make ends meet, and there's just a large coalition of people that came together because they think that's wrong.
What's the structure of what you've been doing since 2004? You've obviously gone into this at some depth.
The process is to have a number of meetings and then to put out successive drafts of the material that we have and try to reach consensus around that around the table in this broad group, and that's what we've been able to do today by issuing our report that Time for a Fair Deal.
Now, someone listening is probably ahead of me on this because they will be listening on Thursday, and on Monday afternoon, I have not seen the 11 recommendations. It sounds like a lot to bite off to list 11 recommendations, but perhaps we can talk around.
Well, rather than going through all of them, why don't we just say that what we're not recommending, a guaranteed annual income.
All right.
Because the new benefits that we're talking about would, in part, be tied to work.
Right.
We are not recommending any increases to the social assistance programs in Ontario because those continue to fall behind and they continue to be unpopular programs, not only with the public at large, but also with the recipients who receive them.
So in a sense, you're saying that because the social assistance programs seem destined not to be funded, you've bypassed them with your recommendations.
Yeah, they've proved to be very, very difficult to keep up to date, and in fact, they were decreased, or the basic welfare program, now called Ontario Works, was decreased by 22% by the Harris government in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And it's continued to erode by almost that same amount again since that time. And when you look at the last increases that the NDP put in 1993, you're looking over that 13-year period of an erosion of 46%.
Right.
You'd have to go very far afield for a benefit that's eroded that much. And now we're looking at benefits in real terms that are almost at pre-centennial levels.
I see. Where was the emphasis then put in the recommendations as a whole? Where did you, the thrust of them?
Yeah, the recommendations of reports in years gone by have been really looking at social assistance programs to do the heavy lifting, whereas we've really looked at the income security system as a whole, like through the tax system, through refundable credits, through working income credits, as a way of trying to support work and allow people to engage the labor force in a way that they can continue to make ends meet and have decent lives.
Right. Okay.
And that's going to be what's important in the longer term.
What happens to people who are disabled and too ill to show up for regular, reliable work? Now, their income tax is destined to go up under the Harper government, and their benefits, of course, seem to be destined to go down. If they can't work, is there anything in these recommendations for them, or is this a separate group who can work?
Well, first of all, the way we've defined work over the years, we've tended to see more and more people included in the workforce. When we go back 30 years ago, we would look at people with disabilities and lone parents, for example, as people who are effectively outside the labor force.
So that's true. We've included
a lot more people in the labor force. And for those who are very, very disabled, who have no reasonable prospect of work, we think that those, rather than being on a program like social assistance, they should be taken care of at the federal level.
Oh.
Social assistance programs, for example, have monthly reporting requirements, very tight eligibility rules, and we don't see the real need for that for people who are effectively outside the labor force.
And that was one of your recommendations?
That is one of our recommendations, yes.
Very good. What was the main thrust of your recommendations then for getting people back to work? I mean, I understand there are terrific disincentives in terms of social assistance clawbacks,
well,
and then income tax on top, which of course is being raised.
Yeah, and that's why we have proposed the idea of refundable tax credits, both
All right.
for people who are working and a base income tax credit for people who are working or not working.
What does this mean on April 30th for the people who would file such a thing?
Well, it would mean that if you look right now, people do get GST credits and child benefits, and they file on April 30th, and then starting on July 1st, they start to receive some very nominal credits
right.
if they're working-age adults through the GST tax credit.
Yep.
For example, it might give you somewhere around anywhere from $50 to $80 a month, and it's delivered on a quarterly basis. We see the use of that sort of tax credit mechanism in a much more profound way, in a way to deliver basic benefits to people so that they are able to keep up, because we know that we can only raise the minimum wage so far, and we know that, for example, that putting up social assistance benefits would create new disincentives, or at least in the minds of the public. And so we really see not only that the employment insurance program should be brought back into equilibrium because it serves so few people in large urban areas, especially in Ontario,
yep.
we also see it twinned with the working income tax benefits and a basic refundable credit as something that would which would actually fill that gap, simply because we know that wages can only go up so far, yet we're looking at expenses in large cities, for example, where people just can't make ends meet and something's got to give.
So, for instance, this tax credit that arrives, instead of being tens of dollars, could be hundreds of dollars for the people who qualified.
Absolutely.
All
right. We see a benefit that would provide as much as or close to $3,000 a year for people who are working full-time at minimum wages and trying to make ends meet at the hours they can get, which is usually only around 31 to 32 per week.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, employers like to keep them below a certain threshold so they're part-time, don't they?
Well, not just that, but the fact that the work that's available, especially in the service industries, can be split shift. It doesn't start till
yeah.
later on in the day. If you're
yep.
in a sandwich shop, and you might only get 30, 31 hours a week, and that's all there is. If you talk to people who are working in those types of jobs, one of the first things they say when you ask them what do they want, they don't tell you greater pay because they know that's unrealistic, but they do say they want more hours.
Yeah, yeah. And so you're proposing, because we need these workers and because the public is unwilling to pay more for their services, then you're proposing that we bring them up to a living wage with these tax credits.
Yes, in a nutshell, and that is done in other countries.
Which other countries is it done in? I'm curious.
Mostly in the Northern European countries.
All right, yeah.
When you think of Northern European countries, the idea of working poverty is an oxymoron. Here we tend to tolerate it a bit more, and perhaps we shouldn't.
Yeah.
And now for a short break from our interview. Thank you. We've been listening to John Stapleton from the Modernizing Income Security Task Force outline the thrust of their 11 program recommendations.
If you're going to top up people who are working, what was proposed for people who are not working and who are facing the steep mountain of clawbacks of not only funding, but also benefits, which like prescription drugs and...
Well, we see basically there is a gap with the working poor, for example. People with good jobs generally have benefit programs, and people on social assistance also have the benefit of premium-free drug benefits and for prescription drugs, and also in some instances a basic dental program. So we really see that those types of programs should be offered to the working poor, so that people when they do make the attempt to leave social assistance, in fact, they don't have to leave their prescription drug card and their access to dental services behind.
So in fact, this speaks to almost a divorce of these programs from social assistance. It speaks to a narrow focus for social assistance and a much broader focus for these kinds of support that would enable people to cross over into work without a large penalty.
Right. I think you put it exactly right, and we would see less emphasis on social assistance programs doing the heavy lifting. Let's not look to welfare as the main... As the main solution to that problem, and start to do something now before we have that recession to put programs in place that are actually going to work for people so that they can keep their jobs. And rather than having programs that reduce when people begin to work, that we would actually give them a bit more when they begin to work, and that's the basics of having those incentives.
Have you dealt with the... provincial clawbacks of federal benefits like the National Child Benefit Supplement?
Yeah, we believe in the case of the National Child Benefit Supplement that there should be an overall income platform for children, and that we should cobble the current social assistance program or the additional amounts for children together with the National Child Benefit, create a pool of funds that then would allow social assistance to be a program for adults only, and then child benefits would be paid entirely outside of the welfare system.
Who would administer them to the child? The parents still?
Well, the funds that are paid on the child benefits go to parents in the first instance. That's always been the case,
yes.
No matter what program. But it would be up to the province and the federal government to work out a deal so that the... so that the benefits would be paid seamlessly. That's the main thing. Different provinces have done it in different ways. Most use the tax. Most smaller provinces don't have the wherewithal to deliver it themselves, and they use the tax system in order to couple their benefits and perhaps would have their coat of arms along with the flag of Canada on the statement that comes out.
So two or three sources of income, hopefully one check.
We wouldn't really look to whether you were on social assistance or whether you're a member of the working poor in order to... we don't want to have children being an impediment to being
in the workforce
and looking at children to being a disincentive. And in many ways, that's what happens with the current programs. But with the National Child Benefit in place, and remember, the clawbacks were only meant to be an interim measure.
Like income tax.
Yeah, in 1917 when it was first brought in, you're quite right.
That's right. Single mothers with children are the most poorly paid under the current welfare system. A floor like this would hopefully take them out of this category? I mean,
would it
apply to single parents? Because then again, it's demographically possible to separate them out and to punish them.
Let's look at it this way. If you have a single parent right now who's receiving EI, she doesn't receive her benefits for her children from EI. She gets it through the national platform called the National Child Benefit.
All right.
And the Child Tax Benefit.
Yeah.
If she's also working as a waitress, for example, at a lower paid job, she receives her funding for her children through the National Child Benefit. So yes, she's getting it from two different sources.
Right.
So it's really nothing new for somebody who's been outside the social assistance system.
How do you get around the prejudice against
prejudice against single parents, and people look at lone parents who are on social assistance, and certainly in the States, that's where a lot of the prejudice has actually been. If we start to treat people as adults who have their children, their children's benefit outside of the social assistance system, we'll stop having the perception that they are quote unquote welfare families. So we don't think of it that we don't think that way about people who are on EI. They receive EI.
Yeah, they're not EI families. No.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah. So, in fact, there's a bit of social change required here, in the sense that maybe the federal money comes with strings that it can't be clawed back for a change.
Well, the clawbacks that were in place were really an interim measure, and you know, we already have five provinces that have restructured out of those.
Which ones?
Quebec, BC, Saskatchewan, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland have already restructured out
yeah.
of those. And although it doesn't necessarily mean higher benefits, what it does mean is that you, once you start to earn money and you start to move out of the welfare system, you may lose your own benefits for yourself as an adult, but you don't lose your children's benefits at the same time.
Wow, very important. Well, you've dealt with a number of facets that seem to be deficient in the current system and seem to be large improvements. Have you received any political support? You have received support from the city for this study and these announcements.
We have, yes.
Okay. You get anything from the province?
Not at this time.
Right.
I think they've looked at it as a positive move. And, of course, we had the provincial parliamentary assistant, Deb Matthews, was an ex officio member of the task force, and has been
right.
quite positive about the process.
Okay. Now we've got this conservative government federally. Now they're painting themselves as horses of a different color with this recent Flaherty budget and all its tax breaks for everybody. Have they shown any indication they like the idea of the tax breaks you're proposing?
Well, it's interesting that you raise that, because one of the lesser known parts of Mr. Flaherty's budget, in fact, is the proposal to look into a working income tax benefit. It was no part of their announcements of the budget, but there it was in the budget detail.
Wow.
And it was completely unexpected, because it did carry over from the Goodale budget or the economic statement in the fall.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
we're
cautiously optimistic. They're supportive of working Canadians, and they're supportive of the idea that they ought to be able to make ends meet and not be overtaxed. And one way of looking at that is to use the tax system to pay people refundable credits.
Right. Where would people go to actually see the 11 recommendations and maybe find some links to discussion of them?
They can Google Toronto City Summit Alliance, or they can go to the Toronto Alliance website, as it's called, at www.torontoalliance.ca.
www.torontoalliance.ca, all one
yeah.
word. Yeah. Oh, great.
We have recommendations that relate to EI, the tax system, and we also have a number of recommendations about social benefits. But the really chief among them is the idea that rather than be looking to the social assistance system to resolve these issues, that we look outside of it and try to the extent possible to make the social assistance system smaller while we still try to give new breaks to people who are trying to become self-reliant.
All right, John. Thank you for your time today, especially so late in the day for an unscheduled interview.
You're quite welcome.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We've been listening to John Stapleton from the Modernizing Income Security Task Force outline the thrust of their 11 program recommendations. In the middle of the show, you heard Mead Lux Lewis, Honky Tonk Train Blues, from Atlantic Blues Piano. And coming up, Albert Ammons, Boogie Woogie Dream, with Pete Johnson, from American Roots Music, Disc 2. Thank you. Disrespect is now archived on the web at www.radioforall.net. That's not the word for, that's the number, radioforall.net. You can now download and listen to the show whenever you want to hear Disrespect. Disrespect also has a new calendar where hopefully you can find out what next week's show is going to be. It's at www.calendric.com/disrespect. C-A-L-E-N-D-R-I-C. calendric.com/disrespect. Disrespect will be back next week. The show is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.